our guess is here he says, "Oh, foolish Galatians." And so we can guess that it's then, because he's talking to Galatians. He might have stopped before that, but there's no clear way to say when the direct quote to Peter ends and when the theological discourse begins. And so I think that we can maybe assume that the whole thing is to Peter, or a paraphrase of what he said to Peter, but a paraphrase that is meant to engage with where the Galatians are at right now. So
we can keep going. So, "Oh, foolish Galatians, who you..." How would you translate this? Maybe deceived? I think here it gives us bewitched. Bewitched, whatever. "To whom," literally, "according to the eyes," so according to your own eyes, "Jesus Christ was..." I think clearly portrayed is what we go with in English, and I think that works pretty well. "Was clearly portrayed as having been crucified. So this only I wish to learn from you, from works of the Torah," works of the law, the spirit you received, "or from the hearing of faith." Again, this phrase right here is difficult. We can say hearing of faith, we can say the report of faith. So the hearing of faithfulness, the report of faithfulness, the message which is this faith, the content of the faith that's here. It's an ambiguous phrase, and so we don't want to go in and to maybe nail that down too tightly, just grammatically. There's a lot of ways that this can be read. But clearly there's something with regard to hearing or report of faith or faithfulness, something like that, which could be, again, could be a message about faith, like believe this thing. It could be a message about faithfulness, Christ's faithfulness. It could be the whole deposit of the faith. So this is what the Christian faith is. So it could be taken in sort of like a substantive kind of sense, which I think works as well. So you have some sort of distinction between from works of the Torah or the hearing of faith. In this, so, or from the hearing of faith, the reports of pistis. In this way, foolish you are, having begun in the spirit or with the spirit, now in the flesh or with the flesh, you are completing, question mark, these things. Did you suffer in vain? If indeed, this is what happened, indeed, in vain, also in vain. The one thus supplying to you the spirit, and this is the same word, energon, we'll say energizing mighty deeds, dunamis, so powers, powerful deeds, we'll say miracles often. That brings into categories of natural and supernatural that usually aren't native to the text, so we'll say just powerful things, works of power. So energizing powerful deeds among you from works of the law or from the hearing or report of pistis. So again, he's saying, look, this crazy stuff that's happening to you guys, there has been crazy works of power that God has done. Let me ask you a question. Was it because of this faith that was given to you? Or is it because you guys got circumcised? Here's a good question. He's saying, look, before you guys were circumcised, this always crazy nuts stuff was happening. He probably didn't say crazy nuts. That's my own gloss.
This is a direct translation from Matt Thomas.
Just as Abraham, okay, this is big. So just as Abraham, and then he jumps into quoting mode here, trusted God, and it was accounted to him as righteousness. So he's saying, look, which one was it? Is it these works of the law, or is it from faith? And he says, just as Abraham, let's look at what Abraham did. He trusted God. I think that usually we'll get, he believed God, which is okay. It's okay. We'll say trusted. Just as Abraham trusted God, and it was accounted to him as righteousness. So he, this is the same thing that, that Paul does in Romans too. He says, like, let's take Abraham as fundamental. Was he received by God before you're circumcised or after you're circumcised? Was it before he had the works of the law or after he had the works of the law? He was before those. He trusted God first. He, God had clearly seen that, that Abraham trusted him. He said, Abraham, hey, so I know that you're in Ur of the Chaldeans and you have your whole family over there. I want you to leave everything that you have and I want you to follow me. Okay, cool. Where are we going? I'm not telling you. I'm sorry, I can't tell you that. I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you with a lot of descendants. But you have to trust me. So what does Abraham do? He says, okay, I will trust you. Even though this is clearly wheels off, this is clearly nuts, everybody that's around me, whole family, all of Ur of the Chaldeans is going to think this is crazy. I'm going to go because I trust you. For whatever reason, I trust you. So he goes and he leaves and he walks all around. And there's all kinds of crazy stuff that happens. And then it eventually gets to the point where it says, Abraham trusted God and it was accounted to him as righteousness. So however you want to take that to mean, clearly God had seen that Abraham trusted him. And that's before circumcision, anything like that happens. And so that's what Paul is referencing here. That's what he's bringing up. Same thing he does in Romans.
He's giving some nucks to Abraham.
Yeah, exactly. And he's saying, look how it happened with Abraham. Because if Abraham is our model, well, then clearly God received him without having these things that made him Jewish. Before any of these works of the law were there, God received him as he was. You know then that the ones from pistis, I'll just leave that word there. We'll go with that because that's the Abraham thing. And if we want to say just belief, that doesn't do it. If we just want to say just faithfulness, it doesn't do it. I mean, loyalty, honestly, might be the most prudent thing. If you look at what Abraham has towards God, there's this loyalty. It's almost like you can look at like a dog with his owner, and the owner says, "Hey, we're going over here." And the dog's like, "Where are we going?" He's like, "I'm not telling you. I'm sorry, I can't tell you that. But do you want to come?" And the dog's like, "Sweet, here we go." So there's this loyalty that's there, where he's like, "Hey, wherever you go, I will follow you." That's the quality that he has. That's what the narrative sort of, you know, portrays. And so, we'll just say pistis and leave it at that. So, you know then that the ones from pistis, these are sons of God. Sons of Abraham. Which makes sense. It's like, of course, if this is the Abraham quality, then the ones with pistis will be the sons of Abraham. I think that would be like seeing beforehand. Yeah. So seeing beforehand, or now seeing beforehand, the scripture sees beforehand that from pistis, righteous, like you can say righteous would be, so that would be righteous, the nations, the God, that is extremely convoluted as far as how it actually works. I'll give you a gloss that will make more sense than just order. So, now, the scripture, seeing beforehand that God, from faith, would make, and the would make is in parentheses there, there's not something that's there, that's not actually there, but it's. I think you can see it is implied. So, would make the nations righteous. So, from pistis, God would make the nations righteous. If you just go by the Greek word order, it's really hard to make an English sentence that works. Literally, the next thing is pre-gospeled. This is what God did. God pre-gospeled, pre-good news to Abraham that all the nations in you will be blessed. So he pre-gospeled it. Here you're seeing, this is the gospel as it is right now, but that's the pre-gospel. That's actually kind of cool when you think about it. What's the pre-gospel? What's the seed of the gospel that's coming to fruition right now? Well, the pre-gospel is, in you, Abraham, all the nations will be blessed. So that's the seed of the gospel that is being flowered right now in what happens in Christ. So that makes sense of where Paul's talking about the gospel, what's happening with the gospel. You know, something's happening against the gospel that's really, really terrible. Well, this is, if you want to see what the gospel is, this is it. That all nations will be blessed in you, in Abraham. That's what the gospel is. That's the sort of the pre-announcement of the gospel. And in the coming of Christ, that's what's happened. Make some sense?
Yeah.
So
he's like, when he's saying all nations will be blessed, that's when he's talking about, like, him coming to break the barrier between Jews and Gentiles.
Exactly.
Not to just bless Jews, but, like, I got this for her body.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a good, way of putting it.
Sweet. I got this for everybody.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
So I'll just repeat that. So,
that's so cool.
God, pre-gospel to Abraham that literally, it's in, there's no way to render that in English. So, in you, all the nations will be blessed. So that the ones from faith are being blessed with the ones from Pistis are being blessed with the faithful one, Abraham. With this topisto, that's the just adjective form. So the faithful one, Abraham. For as many as from works of the law, or works of Torah, are under a curse, they are. For
curse they are.
Yeah, it's just what it says. He just says under a curse they are. He's not saying. I don't think he's using this in a. I think he's using this in an indicative sense, and not like throwing out. Kind of like, hey, let them be accursed. You have that earlier. This is just saying, no, like they're under a curse. This is the way he understands this theologically. Under a curse they are, for it has been written that under a curse is each who does not remain in all the things that have been written in the book of the Torah in order to do these things. So that's what it says actually in the book. Now, because in the law, no one is justified before God is clear, because nobody actually keeps the whole Torah like that. It's this thing where what it does is it brings the knowledge of sin. It brings this conviction of sin. It shows the Torah. I think you can see in Paul. There is a sense that there's some remedy to Torah, but you don't see that emphasized in Paul. What you see emphasized in Paul is that the Torah is more the diagnosis than the remedy. It's more diagnosis than remedy. It's telling you, you see because of Torah, and in trying to uphold Torah, you see your own condition. You see sort of what you know, what humans under Adam are like. So Paul brings that out. Now, there's more to it than that. Paul goes and says, there's other parts where he says, look, the Torah, let's not blame this on the Torah. The problem is our condition. So don't go and say the Torah is something that's bad. Because the Torah, I think it says it's good and holy and perfect or something like that. So don't go and say, hey, this is all the Torah's fault. Like, God gave us a crappy gift, because he didn't. But just as much as it goes and it leads us into life, as like Psalm 1 would say, it goes and also shows us our brokenness, and it shows us our need for healing. So you have both of those things. Here he's bringing out the side where it says, look, if this is all we have, we're still under a curse because we still have this need for healing. There's the condition of humanity. We aren't that new creation yet, you can say. That's where he goes yet. We're still old creation. And old creation is something where the way he says in Romans 8, like all of creation is waiting to have this all creation has been subjected to meaninglessness, to this futility. And all of creation, not just us, all of creation is crying out for this renewal to take place. And so if the renewal hasn't taken place, we're still just under Torah, well then we're still screwed. We're still under a curse because there's no actual renewal that's happened. Does it make some sense? That's kind of putting together various pieces of Paul's theology to fill out and flesh out what he's saying here. So, so I'll repeat that. Now, Now, because in the law, nobody is justified before God is clear, because the righteous ones from Pistis will live. Again, that's just a direct quote from, I think, Habakkuk 2:4. I know, Habakkuk. The righteous ones, you know, it's kind of funny here. This is a hit the pause button and go on a side note. But this is really interesting. In Habakkuk 2:4, the word here that's there, it's the Hebrew word is emunah, and we translate that almost all the time as faithfulness. Sometimes we'll translate it as truthfulness. There's only one place in the English Bible that we've translated this as faith, and rather than faithfulness. And the one place that we do it is here, Habakkuk 2:4, which is interesting. And if you want to trace this, you don't want to go too far down the conspiracy theory road, and so I don't want to do that. At the same time, I think that there's legitimacy to saying that the reason that we translate Habakkuk 2:4 in our English present-day Bibles as faith rather than faithfulness is because of Reformed theology. It's because of Reformed theology that brings this strong faith works paradigm where it's, hey, you've got faith, what you believe on one side, versus works, what you do on the other side. Well, what Paul does is Paul, here and in Romans, Paul pulls out Habakkuk 2:4 and says, here's my thesis statement. The righteous, my pistis, will live by this, whatever this happens to be. Now, the underlying thing in Hebrew, we translate that all the time as faithfulness. But if here from a Reformed perspective, if we're saying the righteous will live by faithfulness, that doesn't fit in sort of the Reformed faith works paradigm. You can't make that. It's very, very difficult to say, no, it's not about faithfulness. It's about faithfulness, not about works. It's really hard to figure out how that works. And so we translate it instead as faith, which has a sense of, you know, belief. That's kind of the main thing that's there, at least in English, the way it finally reaches us. But the underlying Hebrew word there is almost the strong majority of the time is translated as faithfulness. And so that's another one where if you're looking in, I mean, every translation you're going to have, there's no just pure translation. Every time that I try to translate pistis, I have to make some sort of concession in one way or the other. There's no just purely, this is just what the Greek says. Because even if you're just going out with the Greek side, it says there's different senses of nuance that are in one area or another area. If you're going to pick one English word to represent one Greek word, you're going to have to make a judgment call there. And so the judgment call that, I mean, I'm guessing that right there, it says the righteous will live by faith. But again, it's that word pistis, which primary definition.
Will live by pistis.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing where in Romans, that's the thing that Paul sets up as his thesis statement. And if you want to look at, again, this is kind of just repeating myself, but if you look at Habakkuk, if you look at, you know, Habakkuk 2:4, the original word as it's given, if you're just reading that straight up, you would say faithfulness or truthfulness, something like that. So even the sense of, I think it's a sense of passive faith. Is really hard to make that work with Habakkuk 2:4, unless what you say is that Paul is giving a rereading of Habakkuk 2:4, where Habakkuk 2:4 actually said one thing, but Paul is rereading it in a way that says a different thing. I think that's got problems if you go down that road. Anyway, that could be a longer conversation we can go on, but we won't, so that we can get through more of this. So blah blah.
In other words, get that word tattooed on your body.
So, now the Torah is not from Pistis, but here he's quoting these things. The one who does these things will live in them. That's just another Old Testament quote. Christ, us, the verb here is ex agorasin, which is agora is like a market, and ex agorasin would be like to. The verb is used like to buy from a slave market. It has that connotation. So Christ has, this will often be like said, like purchase us, but it's purchase us from the slave market is the place where that would usually be. That's the connotation that has. Christ has purchased us out from the curse of the Torah, having become on behalf of us a curse. For it has been written, under a curse is all who, or under a curse is everyone who is hanging upon a tree. And so there's deep theology here. Paul, I feel like we could get lost in this forever, but I'll try to give at least a short thing. Paul goes, sees the condition of Israel as being under a curse still. They're still in this sort of exile kind of period. Christ goes, becomes a curse. So Christ, he takes the judgment upon Israel upon himself. You can look in it, like, if you want to see what's the framework to understand this, Isaiah 53. The punishment that was upon us was laid upon his shoulders, that kind of thing. So this curse, whatever this was that's intended for us, he took upon himself. And a way that you can see that, Paul pulls this out and he says, look, anyway, the Old Testament says, the Torah says, anybody that hangs on a tree is cursed. Well, he sees the tree, like, cross made out of wood, it's a tree sort of thing. Christ is hanging upon that. Clearly, he is becoming a curse at this point. And the Jews say the exact same thing. They say, yeah, he's accursed, clearly. So he couldn't be the Messiah because he's accursed. And the Messiah is going to be this really powerful figure who's going to go, and he's going to go and kind of reign the nations and do all kinds of stuff like that. And Paul would actually say, yeah, sort of. Like, there's something to that. Christ is ruling the nations, but you have to hold this together with Isaiah 53. You have to hold this together with the suffering servant. The thing that I think that Paul gets before he is a before his conversion, the thing that he gets is that there is going to be this Messiah figure, this promised figure who will rule the nations. But he views this in a way that is separated from the suffering servant. So you have suffering servant, whatever the heck those things mean. Maybe it means Israel, who knows? It's kind of, kind of ambiguous. And then you have this promised Davidic king. And so he's looking for this guy. He's not really looking for this guy over here. The thing that blows his mind and the thing that knocks him off of the horse is that this guy over here and this figure over here are the same figure. That's the thing. Like, have you guys ever seen Ace Ventura?
Yeah.
Like the first one? The best analogy I can have for this is what happens to Paul. You have Finkel and Einhorn, Einhorn and Finkel, Finkel and Einhorn, Einhorn and Finkel, and you have Jim Carrey trying to figure this out. He's trying to think, how does this all work? What's the relationship between Finkel and Einhorn? Finkel and Einhorn, Einhorn and Finkel, Finkel and Einhorn, Finkel and Einhorn and Finkel. And then Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel. I kissed a man.
That was the greatest conclusion to the explanation of a Bible verse.
Oh God! I want that. Can I? I'm gonna need to end it out.
I think that's the.